sometimes feel like you're running on caffeine and stress? Perhaps you've never experienced the magic of naps. Life's too short to be grumpy. A little snooze investment can go a long way. You hated them when you were a child, but you'd give anything for them now. Go ahead and indulge. It's for your own good and probably for everyone else's as well. Say goodbye to stress and hello to the rejuvenating power of naps. That's right. Diesel and Clooney is sponsored by Naps.
That was the best.
You know who you sound like?
Who do I sound like?
You sound like the king from the Squatty Potty YouTube commercial. Do you know that one? Have you seen it?
I think I've vaguely seen it once. Well, now
it's brilliant. It's one of those great things. Like, I wrote about this once, and the title of the post was that was a terrible idea until we thought of it, and it was how we in the West tend to steal the greatest ideas from the rest of the world. And one of those was the Squatty Potty. These people just created this little stool that you put around your stool that brings your knees up closer to your chest, which helps with, I think the word they use is elimination. But nobody had ever heard about this product until they made this YouTube commercial. And there's a king who is talking about the unicorn who is making these amazing rainbow eliminations. And it's brilliant. Now, like, everybody go YouTube it right now. But you sound
exactly like...
You can't
say elimination without saying commode.
I feel like you could, but should you? Question, right?
That is the question.
That whole phrase should have started the entire conversation. You can, but should you?
Oh, I feel like, yeah, we've just reached our theme for the rest of the show. We absolutely can. Should we?
We can, but
should we? And you're accusing me of being downhill. I see.
There we go. I think we have it. Well, Jerry, I feel like at this point it would be silly not to introduce our guest, because
it would be...
what our dear other listener has missed out on is that before we even began recording, we basically just chatted for what would be a whole episode of goodness, and I'm so sorry that I didn't record earlier. So other listener, I'm very pleased, very pleased to introduce, both of our listeners we're deeply grateful to, and now one of them is on the show. This is Christy Steele, a good friend of mine, who I have always thoroughly enjoyed every time we've been able to get together, and her husband
me
is
too.
One of my favorite people.
This is the first time I've met her, but
Jerry has enjoyed every time.
Yes,
and Christy Steele has been a faithful listener. She's 50% of our listener base, so we have half of our audience is now on the podcast.
It's great.
Long may it continue.
Long may it continue. And
I don't know how many podcasts can brag in that way, right?
Like, yeah, it's true. How many podcasts can say that half our listeners have been on the show? Yeah. If we get our other listener on the show, we'd be a self-licking ice cream cone. We would have all of our listeners broadcasting to all of our listeners.
I know there are lots of podcasts out there that like, for them, it's all about number of listeners. And for us, it's more about percentages. And I think we're crushing all of you right now.
It's quality over quantity, quality
percentages. That's how we go. But not only, dear Jerry, I didn't even segue that one. Oh dear, I was diving right in.
Sometimes it just happens. Yeah.
I segued without meaning to segue. Speaking of quality, there we go. There it is. Of quality, Jerry.
There it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not just is Christy a load of fun, but she is marvelously talented, insightful, and a bit of an expert in areas that could be very, very helpful to our other listener.
To our other listener.
well, to widen this, speaking of other listener, I'm segueing everything now. Speaking of other listener, Jerry and I both get to work with TCKs. That's, part of the reason we get to do this podcast, TCKs and their families. And many a TCK has either already or is looking forward to furthering their education. That's something that we hope for. And Christy is a huge help in that respect. She actually is very, very good at providing insight into higher education. So, in fact, she has a whole organization, business, nay, empire, called KC360, which Ooh. Helps people with getting into and paying for college. So we thought we would devote this episode to the pursuit of higher learning and how to make that accessible, especially if you're a TCK. Because, as we said off air, I can speak from experience with this. When I graduated from a U.S. style, a DOD, a Department of Defense high school, mm-hmm. overseas. I'd lived just about all of my life overseas, but and seriously considered U.S. universities. And I'm a U.S. citizen. I'm also a British citizen. But I thought, you know, I'll check out the U.S. And Christy can back me up on this. But I have to say, the U.S. college admission system is unlike any other that I experienced. And growing up overseas, I did look into others. I mean, the U.K. has the UCAS system, and it's all pretty streamlined and everything. The EU has very similar things, and they have educational programs like the Erasmus program, all sorts of stuff like that. And then the U.S. basically was like, oh, have we got a show for you? Mm-hmm. And it's a very different system. And it was complex, and there were finances and all kinds of things. And it takes a lot of navigating. All systems do. But I'm pleased to say that aside from a charming personality, phenomenal wit, and the good discernment to be 50% of our listener base, Christy is mm-hmm. also an expert mm-hmm. in helping people move along to this. Now, Jerry, you've had a brush or two with higher education.
Like, this is what comes to mind for me. And this is like this is the framework of this show, right? Like, you've got that TCK experience. You've got this, you've lived literally in every city in the world.
Every single
literally,
one.
literally. Yes. Yeah.
As we speak.
And then you navigated that as a student, like that whole experience of college. I grew up very monoculturally, then lived abroad, raised two TCKs. And just last year sent one to college. So this is really, really relevant to me. In fact, my daughter today is moving into her new house, starting her sophomore year of university. So This is incredibly relevant from different perspectives. So I'm very excited about this conversation.
Yeah. So there we go. I mean, you know, Jerry, we've just talked a whole bunch about Christy. We probably should actually, I guess I should let her.
We should
talk
ask
now.
Her a question.
Right. We should ask her a question. Since I'm basically,
I'm game.
She knows loads of stuff. So thanks for tuning in. Lots of love. But no, I guess we'll actually. So Christy.
It was thank great. You for, thank you.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Because like I said, you do great things. I think you offer incredibly insightful and helpful information to a group of people that we hold very near and dear. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I am also a TCK and grew up in Latin Woo-hoo! America. Yeah, fabulous life experience that I've absolutely loved, and did international business for several years after I graduated. Not my major. Entrepreneur slash, you know, startup, social enterprise wasn't a thing when I was in Ooh. School. Tells my age. But that probably would have been what I had chosen had that been an option. Mm-hmm. And then was asked to recruit for a private university for international students and TCKs. And so did that for almost 5 years and absolutely loved it. But one of the things I saw a lot of was just students' accessibility to their options. Mm-hmm. And unless you were in, and even if you were in a really high dollar international school, your options, you had options and you had accessibility to what options were out there, but it was still really limited to schools that had a budget to travel. Mm-hmm. And when I traveled, I didn't travel with a lot of, you know, private universities. It was like state or big, you know, sometimes community college, big private elite. And those are really good. But from a TCK perspective, they offer very little TCK support. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, from a TCK perspective, we could do a better job of highlighting options for students that actually understood them and would steward them well. Mm-hmm. And so in that vein, left to start my own consulting business, KC360, to do sort of two things. One was to provide a virtual college fair with schools that had TCK support that students could hear from. And two is to provide a monthly educational, basically webinar series that follows the admissions timeline to help students sort of be educated, whether they had like a high school counselor or whether they were homeschooled, you know, whatever their scenario was, so that they were better educated in the higher ed system to ask those questions and to know kind of what they were allowed to ask and not allowed to ask, because there is so much mystery behind the entire higher ed process in the US. And so most of my work is online. I do visit conferences, and I mean, Chris and I met at a conference and talk about.
Oh my gosh, Chris and I met at a conference.
I mean, Jerry, we're kindred spirits.
Really, meets everyone at a conference.
It's really what I do. I just run around to conferences to meet people.
That's actually not very false.
I joke, but it works. Might actually
did you
be
meet
right.
Joy at a conference? That's beautiful.
No, not at a conference, admittedly.
Well, that's why she stuck, because
she was different. There you go.
But you met me and Christy, and we both brought you joy. Not the person.
This is very true. This is very true.
The joy. Yeah.
The emotion. Okay. Yeah.
And thank goodness. Good. And I'm grateful to you both.
Likewise.
Well, I think, okay, so even jumping off with that, so many things swim into my mind. And again, the beauty of this is Jerry and I have you know, we come from different perspectives, and I think that's really helpful. But I know for me, I have to say, and I brought this, I talked a bit about this a little bit with Christy before we started recording. But I did, I graduated overseas, and I remember looking at US colleges and universities, and I have to say, I was not very smart, because I did not understand the complexities of it all. You know, I know words. You apply, you know, there's an admissions process. I knew that. So, you know, you got to prove you're good enough. What I didn't understand was how intricate even that process is. I didn't understand, you know, there are specific things that US colleges and universities are looking for that might be different than other countries and other systems. The US financial system is completely different than just about anywhere else. And even though I was an American, even though I'd gone to a Department of Defense, an American style high school, I was so far removed. I hadn't been in the US. I was so far removed that I didn't understand some of those complexities. And again, you know, other systems have far more of a streamlined sort of thing. And not the US doesn't have something streamlined, but can you walk us through some of what makes that so different and so unique about the US higher education system?
I think one of the most, it's like anything in the world, you know, every industry and every project has its own language and vocabulary. But one of the most unique things about the US higher ed system is just the robustness of the process. And part of that is intentional to become more personal. But I think somewhere along the process, we've really lost sight of that and made it a challenge for a lot of students. I mean, in most countries, you have a national exam, and those exam results determine your future. And by and large, it's not your major, it's not your finances, it's those scores. And you can kind of choose here and there, but, you know, you may or may not make it. And then if you don't, there's other options that, you know, will still glean you positive employment and opportunity. And in the US, I feel like there's a vast difference. There is more trend towards community college if you're looking at a pre-professional degree, and that would be like, you know, dentistry, pre-med, nursing, pharmacy, that kind of thing. But, you know, students are doing that out of financial desperation, not out of any other reason, really, because most community colleges, you can knock out all of your non-pre-professional requisites before you enter into a four-year degree. And so that's really easy. But you know, when you look at the difference between like the UCAS system or even in Europe, It is really fast. And I think a lot of students really are, it is a complexity and it's really confusing to understand. Why are they asking me all these questions? Why do they care about activities and essays and an interview or a letter of recommendation? What do all of these things mean and why? And the intent, I believe, is beautiful, to really get to know students and understand if the campus environment and academic cohort that they have there is a good fit for that student. And I think the intentionality behind it is beautiful, but it can be very confusing when you're from a country or you live in a country that, you know, one score, one day factors your life. And so when you think about those differences, then it does, I think, cause a lot of anxiety for students because they suddenly feel so much pressure. And that's whether you're, you know, an international student. And in my case, an international student is someone that would be required to have a visa here. Or you're an expat, meaning you have, you know, you have some form of citizenship, permanent residency to attend. And, you know, those are hard things. And so one of the things that I really love about my job is helping students to understand what those components are and why. And really, it's just a larger conversation for who they are. And unless you're looking at a highly select university or an Ivy, most universities just really want to get to know you. And I always tell students, you know, that your quantity doesn't really matter over your quality. You know, better to list your activities that really matter to you, that really changed you and impacted your life in high school, than to list, you know, six other things that you were involved in just to say you're involved in.
Yeah.
And there's so much pressure on the student, right? To because like from personal experience, but also from observational experience, right? Like there's so much of that that is just unknown. And so you're assuming, you're second guessing, you're trying to figure out, you're trying to get into the brain of every university that you're applying to and that you'd like to go to, right? And trying to figure out what is it exactly that they are. They just trying to get to know me? Do they care about my test score? Do they want to know how many things I led in high school? Do they, like, what is it that they want to know? And that's absolutely overwhelming. And so I think your role and your voice in this is absolutely not just important, it's critical, right? Like these things that you're saying are so valuable, and students need to hear that. Yeah.
Well, my passion is really helping students and families understand that universities want two things. They want to understand how you're going to contribute. You know, what am I, Christy, going to contribute to campus socioeconomically, academically, emotionally? So, you know, physically, how am I going to contribute to the campus? And then they also want to know, what are you going to consume? What are you going to take from us? You know, what are you going to glean from us? And I think when students understand those two things, then it really levels the playing field and it helps them see, like, there is an interest. Now, yes, there's an algorithm and there is a machinery that is undoubtedly true. But, you know, schools, you know, they really do want students that they know will fit well in their environment. And of course, every campus has some similarities, but, you know, there's some differences in schools. Sure. And I have a lot of thoughts about TCKs attending schools that don't have TCK support, because, you know, it's like, I liken it to, you know, you've had a student in a really supportive, probably highly customized academic experience. And then you send them to a really big school and it's like you've put them in a dinghy in the Pacific Ocean. Well, that's not a setup for success. It can be done, but should it?
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. And ooh, that's our good. Theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be done.
So what, like, in your expertise, how many, like, what percentage of schools have TCK support?
It's a pretty small percent.
And what quantifies TCK support?
To me, TCK support is that there is a combination. It's not, you know, this list does not determine it, but it's a combination of these types of things where they include expats in their orientation. They have some sort of support system within the international office, meaning, like, if you're not a visa holder, you still can have support from the office. There's a lot of inclusion with TCKs in, you know, a lot of their support bases for international students, such as, you know, we'll help you set up a bank account. Oh, your phone bill is due, your mom is asleep in Singapore, you don't know what to do, you can call me. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of support. A lot of times there's extra counseling support and they have a person that, you know, is specified for that. And then just activities that are super inclusive of TCKs beyond just, you know, this is our international day and you can, you know, oh, you're not a visa holder, so you can't do the dance, you can't sing the song, you can't make the meal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of support is really important because, you know, we all, no matter where you're from and no matter what your background is, want to know that we can be seen and that we belong. And if you don't have a place that you feel that way, then it's very difficult to assimilate and feel like you do belong when you don't have an underlying support system to nest that in.
I think it's such a beautiful thing, even just from my own interaction with TCKs. I have run into many a TCK who has struggled with going off to university because university didn't have a place to put them. Because as you said, you know, and not to pick on the US, because I think it happens elsewhere as well, but, you know, the US does it. The US has a lot of higher education opportunities. It's big business in the US. You know, there's good reason. There's so much draw to US universities. And my goodness, there are some amazing universities, and the investment in it is substantial. But I can think of times when TCKs have said things like, you know, I happen to be a US citizen. I never actually lived in the US. So I went to a US university. But I needed some extra help. I've never lived in the US, so I didn't know how to navigate things. But the university looked at them and said, "You have a US passport. Like you're just a domestic student. No, you can't come to international orientation. You're not international.
Right. Or you have a US residency. So what is your problem?"
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, and you have a US address, but residency, I mean,
right. And so these students who said, "Yeah, I have no idea how to function in the US. Just because I have a US passport, or a US residency, or a US address, that's not actually my experience. I actually need just as much help as a foreign student." Mm-hmm. And it's bizarre that, you know, a bureaucratic system says, no. Like, your experience doesn't matter. Your data says that you should be fine.
So a lot of it is capacity, you know, that you've got an office, especially at really, really large state schools. You've got an office of probably two or three people that their sole job is making sure that their students' visas are current and that they're compliant. That is a massive job. And you really just don't have the bandwidth beyond that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, adding something like that on when it's not required legally can be a real challenge for an international office. So I definitely understand it. But, you know, I liken it to a lot. I mean, I tell this story to a lot of parents that, you know, for the most part, no matter how you went overseas, whether it was military, diplomat, you know, contractor, school teacher, you know, sending organization, however you went, there was likely some sort of support system there. You know, somebody met you at the airport. Mm-hmm. Somebody, you know, took you to, these are the three stores where you'll find the most things from, you know, the US. This is where you pay your power bill. This is the best app to use for the taxis. Here's how you work the transportation system. You know, there was a support base to help you integrate into society. But there's this reverse mentality when you bring students over to the US. It's like, well, you're from here, so it's going to be great. I loved my experience at UNC. It's going to be great, honey. And I mean, you know, just like wherever your employer was, didn't just throw you into Namibia and be like, have fun, bye. You know, there was a net for you as an adult. There was a net for you, however you trespassed across the world. Yeah. But you have to expect the same, I think, for your kids when you send them back, because they need that same safety net. They need that same support system. They need someone to say, you know, this Walmart over here has these things, but this Asian store, this is where you'll find your stuff. And, you know, an international office that doesn't have TCK support just doesn't have the bandwidth to do that. Yeah. And I'm not saying you can't succeed, because I've seen a lot of kids do it, but now I see a lot of kids transfer. And that's just a lot of money and emotional time that's just not I don't feel like that's necessary. Work. You know, it's better to pay, you know, the $5,000 more to be at a campus that has a TCK support and just, you know, dig in than it is to pay $10,000 later when you transfer.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, start all over again, right?
Right. And to add to the complexity of it, right? Like we're kind of speaking about TCKs who have themselves figured out, right? Like
that's assuming
they know to go ask for the support, and then is the support there? That's one question. But like if you pull that back, it's like, do they know to ask? Because that's a big piece of the TCK experience, and we're talking about a lot of like that university entry level, right? Like that's when the big transition happens for a lot of them. That's the first time they've lived in their passport country, or that's the first time they've experienced that. And they don't even know what support to ask for, right? Like that's where it gets confusing. So they feel like something's wrong with them because they just don't fit in this system, and they wouldn't even know to go ask for TCK support, right?
And it's the first time they've ever been anywhere as an adult.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what you feel like as a parent, the government literally sees them legally as an adult. I mean, your kids have to sign paperwork now. Mm. You've probably done this, Jerry, where your kid has to say like, yes, my dad can watch my grades and he can access my grades. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're legally an adult. And so, you know, it doesn't matter that you're paying for it. The government doesn't care about that. And so it's not just a transition. Like you're telling your student you need to behave like an adult now and are expected to be one. And I mean, hopefully we've done our jobs as parents in helping them to adult. I have a whole series on adulting. And if you're not familiar with adulting and you have, you know, a 13 to 18 year old, the book Feeding the Hand That Bites You is one of the best adulting books I've ever read.
Oh, it's such a good title.
It's fantastic. But, you know, those are things that when you have TCKs really matter, because it's not just, you know, hi, you're going to college, welcome to adulthood, but they're adulting in a context that typically is really unfamiliar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a really good point to bring up, because one of the things that, When I get to speak at international schools, quite often I'll get the opportunity to speak specifically to seniors or to people, to TCKs who will be going off to university. And from experience, from gathered insights from loads of students across the globe, one of the things that I try to highlight just from what I've heard from them is that especially countries like the U.S. where the culture is pervasive, where I have students who, you know, have never lived in the U.S. They might not even be U.S. citizens themselves, but they're going to university in the U.S. And even for non-U.S. citizens going to school in the U.S., there's this horrible trap that it's easy to fall into. And I've done this, and so I'm speaking from experience. That the U.S. culture is very familiar because U.S. television, U.S. media, U.S. culture is ubiquitous. It's broadcast all over the place. It's the dominant culture. And so we all feel like we have a degree of familiarity with it. And I did this. I grew up on military bases. I thought,
I get this system. I can do this. I grew up on
a military base. That's just super American. I'm more prepared than they are. And that was totally inaccurate. I mean, incredibly inaccurate. And it's that degree of familiarity sort of lulls you into a false sense of security. And I think it's worth taking the extra time, I think, like you said, to look at universities who have a TCK program, even if it's in, you know, especially if it's in the U.S., because we are lulled into a false sense of security. We think, oh, I'm familiar with this, it'll be fine. And that really isn't the case. Living in the U.S. is very different than watching the U.S. on TV. Living in the U.S. is very different than growing up on a U.S.
Which is the opposite of all the other countries, right? Like, exactly. I feel like,
yeah.
Yeah. You can get a good sense of all the other countries from the TV shows.
And it's changed, you know, in the last 5 years drastically. You know, I mean, what was admissible 5 years ago before the pandemic is now completely different, you know? And I think that adds another layer of anxiety to kids, because if you have a school that you know, maybe doesn't require a test score for their admissions, but then requires it for the high dollar scholarships, then they're like, is the ASAT accessible in my city? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what looks like it could be safe and familiar suddenly becomes super complex because you're like, I get this system, but then there's changes that indicate that you don't. Right. And, you know, it's like, woo! So.
Well, and that, I'm glad you touched on that because I'd love to hear from you. You're an expert in so many things that are useful in this arena, but financial aid, let's talk financial aid, because again, speaking from my own personal experience, you know, I was accepted to a US university and I was just a punk little 18-year-old and dollar amounts meant very little to me. You know, I thought, it's fine. Yes, sure. That's a big number, but I mean, surely my parents make that much. I mean, they've fed me all these years. They must have money. And without any, you know, now that I'm older, I'm like, oh my gosh, those are significant sums of money. And especially as someone, you know, familiar with my two main countries are the US and the UK, and they are vastly different as far as sums mm-hmm. of money involved in higher education. And so looking at the US system now, I balk and go, goodness, those are massive, massive sums of money. Mm-hmm. And that can be daunting and overwhelming. The reality is, though, there's a lot to offset that. And I think, you know, this is not the place, and I'm not expert enough to talk about the financing of the higher education system. That's for people far more clever than I. But what I do know, only because of people like you, is that the complexity of that system is complex both on the side of, my gosh, that's a lot of money, but there's a lot on the side of, yeah, let us help you with that. And that can be an overwhelming prospect we don't know what we don't know. And so rather than just say, my gosh, that's far too much, there are a load of things in place to help with that. But for a lot of people, how would you even know where to begin to look to help offset some of those costs? And thankfully, you know, you do know some of that stuff. So give us a lovely overview on why there is information, why there is help available for those vast sums.
I think, you know, there's two really important things to understand when you look at higher ed in the U.S. And this is regardless of where you're looking, whether it's a select, whether it's Ivy, or whether it's, you know, just a very normal university. But very few students pay what they call the actual sticker price. Just like when you walk into a car lot, it is highly unlikely that you will pay for that sticker price on the car. Or, you know, that's a great guy analogy. You know, like a lot of us, we go into a store and we, you know, have a coupon or there's a sale. You know, we don't usually pay the actual retail mm-hmm. price on something. And I think that's something that's really important for parents to look at, because they do. You look at that cost and you're like, well, that's unattainable. Well,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a very rare case that you pay that. And I think the second thing that's really important to understand, and again, this is mostly applies to all universities. Select and Ivies can be a little bit different because they can be, but most universities offer a really high percentage of aid. And what I mean by that is that, you know, most universities have, you know, like between 80 and 95% of students that receive aid. And so, you know, when you think about that, now that does not mean that 80 to 95% of your aid is covered. I'm saying that 80 to 95% of the applicants that apply receive some form of aid. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really important stat, because it is. And, you know, now that aid varies, and we can talk about what that looks like. But for me, and I dig a lot more into this, if you're a super nerd, I've got a podcast that kind of will break this down over the course of the next few months, but also webinars that are free. But there's really it's like a three concentric circle picture of financial aid. And so if you picture three circles, the best way to understand financial aid for the US for most universities is like this. It's one circle that is institutional aid. Institutional is like the university or the college. One is outside aid. And then one is FAFSA, government aid. And so they're concentric because they all play a part together, and they all, you know, ripple into each other. And so institutional aid is aid that is solely controlled by the institution. And so for a lot of schools, when you apply and you fill out an application, that makes you eligible for aid. And that's why they ask all these questions. And I think this is one reason why it's so important that students understand the entire process, because your activities, your test scores, your transcript, your essay, your interview, your letter of recommendation, all those exhausting things can actually get you money. And, you know, I will never be in a position in my life to make, you know, say it takes you, let's say, you know, let's really max it out. Let's say it takes 2 hours to do all that for your college application. I will never make $15,000 in my life for 2 hours.
That's such a good way to look
at it. Not with that attitude.
And so, well, such a downer. And so, you know, I think if students understood the ROI, the return on their investment, that, you know, that type of investment in of their time can glean them $10,000 or $15,000 just by filling out those things and taking the time to really submit a quality application. That yields them institutional aid. And it happens in two ways, right? Because institutions recognize we're not going to have 4.0 students every time. And so we can award a grant, an institutional grant. A grant is money that does not need to be repaid. We can award a grant based on merit, your grades, and we can award a grant based on community service and leadership. And so I always have these two names because they make me laugh. But you can have, you know, in your award letter, you'll have, you know, you've received the McInerney Leadership Scholarship. Well, that just means you displayed leadership. And some man named McInerney gave money, and that's the endowment they gave it from. And then, you know, a lot of times you'll have, you were granted the McIntosh Academic Scholarship. And, you know, that's another guy that gave money, family, you know, four generations in the school, whatever. And, you know, the institution grants you that money. And that's money that they control and they steward. Another institutional part of that concentric circle is departmental money. So if you have, say, you want to be a biology major and they have a biology scholarship, that you typically do have to apply for because it's a departmental scholarship and it's a competitive environment. And a lot of times those are where you get caught in that SAT test score, ACT environment where, you know, they didn't require it for admission, but they did require it for the high dollar, you know, leadership or honor roll or, you know, high competitive biology scholarship, whatever. And so then you do apply for those. And that's where you've got to watch out for your deadlines. But that's all money that the university controls. They have stewardship over that. So that's that circle. And then the second circle, outside aid, that's like, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates scholarship, the FedEx Moving scholarship, you know, that's outside aid. The university doesn't steward that money and they don't control that. And that's, again, things that you apply for that have deadlines. And I mean, kids fill those out in 30 minutes and you will never make $5,000 in 30 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, spend the time. And I tell students, don't spend more than 30 minutes a day on it. Set a timer. Be good about your time so you don't burn out and tweak your essay, have a core essay, tweak it, submit it, you know, pay the tiny, you know, $20 application fee, you know, if you think that you're eligible for it and submit it. And it's a great, great process. And then the third one is the FAFSA. And this is applicable probably to our other listener who would be an expat.
Yep. Listen up.
Who you know, has permanent residency or is a U.S. citizen and has paid into the tax system. And so the FAFSA is the free application for financial student aid. It is being delayed this year for the first time ever until December. And that is because the U.S. passed the Simplification Act, which is an attempt to really simplify the FAFSA questions. It was way over 100 questions, and I think it's they're ballparking now between like 30 and 40. So it has been simplified, and I think it will really help families. But that form, some schools require you to fill it out. Some have another one called the CSS form, and that's hosted by College Board, who does the SAT. But those forms are what help the university have an indicator of what you can afford. And so the application and the institutional aid, that's called sort of a blind look. Like they award money based on you as a student, not on your financial position. The FAFSA is an indicator of your financial position to sort of figure out, you know, what your state of need is. Now, of course, all families are like, I'm high need, I need, you know, aren't we all, right? But
no, but we really are.
Yes, but we really are. But the government and the universities want to know, you know, how do they have a tier or a foundation to glean that? And so they use the FAFSA for that. And what that form does is help determine, from the government's perspective, your eligibility to pay and what you have available in terms of assets and income to pay. Now, there are some changes from the webinars that I've watched that are coming for clergy and foreign tax. So my recommendation would be, if you're overseas and, you know, my colleague, you know, Mary, or my friend Bob filled out the tax, you know, the FAFSA for 20 years and he knows what he's doing. Well, not this year, not anymore. If it were me, I have a partner that is fantastic. They're called MyCap, and I'll make sure that you guys have the link so that families can, our one listener can follow through. But you can look at three universities for free. You put in your FAFSA information and you can see, you know, what you're potentially eligible for. And it's pretty accurate. And it also gives information on general scholarships. So like if the university, let's just say I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. So let's just say, you know, the University of Alabama, if you're interested in going there, or Auburn, and they have a grid system, it'll tell you approximately, according to your grades and test scores and different things and your taxes, what you would get in aid. Mm-hmm. Now, you can go back in and put in, like, you know, I got a TCK scholarship or I got the biology scholarship. You can go in and it'll give you down to the dollar so that you can compare apples to apples, which is a huge mm-hmm. gift, because if you've ever done anything related to financial aid, you know, you basically have to make your own Excel list and you just want to beat your head against the wall. So it solves that. But for one of the reasons I partner with them is because every one of their advisors is an expert in foreign tax, foreign income, and overseas assets. And so if you are in that situation, you are correct. You have a very unique situation that very few people understand. And even if your company or your agency has a tax person that you rely on to fill your taxes out, this is different than a tax person. A lot of tax people don't have that transition to FAFSA. That's a very unique segment of the financial industry. And so you can pay to have someone go line by line on your FAFSA to make sure that it's filled out correctly and that it's maximized. It is $350, but it is worth every penny, because if you're eligible for $10,000 or $15,000, which a lot of families that I work with are, it pays you back. And it saves you so much heartache, because a lot of families do have a rental property at home, right? Or they have a 529, or grandma's going to do this, or you have foreign income that you don't really know what to do with. And having those things listed correctly, to me, has been one of the best partnership, options that I have, because it provides a solution for families that just get stuck. You know, they don't know what it's going to cost, and having that three school free available really helps families see where those concentric circles meet. You know, what is the average aid that the school is going to give me? What happens if I get, you know, the biology scholarship? What will the government probably give me? And so it takes out a lot of the anxiety and mystery of, you know, what is this actually going to cost me?
The anxiety and mystery, if you can take that out of, like, speaking from, to be honest, my wife handled this and she handled it brilliantly. And I got to sit back and watch, last year as we tackled this for the first time. But I think those two words, anxiety and mystery, because it's really stressful, but it's the mystery that causes the anxiety. Like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We all know that there are grants out there. We all know that there's lots of money for students if they've got good grades, if they've done these things. Like we know that. We just don't know where it is. Right. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know which stones to turn over to look under. And so it's exhausting. It's frustrating. There is an emotional toll that has to be paid for whichever parent or both parents or take
really
that on.
Hard. You know, I mean, more arguments so and hard, stress are caused by money than anything else. And how you talk about money and how you handle money. I mean, I had to stop your last podcast when Tanya and Lauren were talking about the boy that said, like, I'm not going to be able to eat breakfast if we don't hit that thermometer. Mm-hmm, number. Mm-hmm. Like, how we talk about money really, really matters. And the way that we talk about money impacts these types of decisions. I mean, you can get a free account with MyCap and look at those three schools if you have a freshman.
Yeah.
You know, like imagine if you have a freshman in high school and you just wanted to see what it would cost and how much that would take out the mystery and the anxiety of like, you know, this looming thing of it's just, it's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars and we can't afford it. Well, nobody can. But at least, you know, give yourself an informed decision on a handful of things. And if you pay for the service, there's a billion-dollar scholarship database you can look at. And we'll talk about scholarships in just a second. But you can, you know, search through that. You can add an unlimited amount of schools. So, I mean, you can, and you can even look by price. Like if I, you know, have my information entered, how much, you know, sort it by the cost and let me look at the cheapest one and see, you know, what it looks like. And, you know, scholarships are rocks, right, that you just have to dig under. And I will say that the secret to scholarships is specificity, which students don't like to hear because then they're like, I don't know what I want to do. Well, I understand. But you need to choose a genre so that you can somewhat specifically look at scholarships because the real money is in upperclassmen scholarships. You know, there's so many more grants for upperclassmen kids and for programs that students are established in. And that's because people know your first year, you might change. I mean, I did. Yeah. I was an education major and I sat in one class and I was like, nope, I will help you cut out your little things for the rest of my life. But that is not for me. Wrong. And so, you know, scholarships are, they're harder, but if you have the ability to be specific and to know, like, I want to do, you know, biology or pediatrics or, you know, something, then it really does help nail down a few things for you so that you can actually know the words to look. And I've got some good tips and tricks for that. I have a scholarship resource list for TCKs and some of it is, you know, random. It may feel like some of it's really specific, but anyone can email me for that and it's updated annually. But, you know, scholarships can be tricky, but most schools are really willing to help and work with you so that they can help pay. And, you know, you are, I do think that it's reasonable. Most families are going to have to pay between 10 and 20,000, but you really shouldn't be paying more than that.
Well, and to zoom out a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, things like the FAFSA, that's specific to U.S. taxpayers. That's for those, you know, involved in the U.S. tax system. But even further than that, the thing is that U.S. universities, foreign students are a big draw. And so scholarships and things like that, even though things like FAFSA, that's a U.S. federal government program for U.S. taxpayers. But as you talk about things like scholarships and the specificity of them, ooh, hard word. I'm a professional. The things like that. Exceptionally professional. I can say specificity. But those apply even beyond, you know, U.S. taxpayers. A lot of foreign students will end up choosing to look at U.S. universities. And for them, there are still scholarship opportunities. In fact, you know, to my knowledge, there are scholarships specifically for foreign students trying to get to the U.S. And so,
and a lot of universities have those. They have other ones you can apply for. There's outside scholarships that a lot of institutions, you know, organizations will accept foreign citizens for. I mean, the Bill and Melinda Gates is one of the most popular.
Yeah. But there's just so much, you know, the complexity of the system, you know, it's sort of a double-edged sword, you know, on in some ways, yes, it can look really, really overwhelming. The flip side of that is that, you know, with a little creativity, there are so many ways to get into the system. And I think you're such a phenomenal resource because you do, you know where to look. Whereas for a lot of people, how would you even know what you don't know?
Right.
And I think that's such a helpful thing, especially to this group of people who maybe don't have at least the geographic access to this sort of thing. You know, if you're an American growing up in the U.S., you're just already in the system. So you probably, without knowing it, get more information. But That's not to say that for third culture kids, for foreign students who grew up outside the U.S., that there isn't a load of information and a load of resources that are there to help with U.S. education, which there are some phenomenal, you know, universities in the U.S.
Yeah,
there are. And one of my, I guess, requirements when I work with colleges for the virtual college fair is that they have some form of scholarships for TCKs and international students, because I just feel like even if I know that, it's really important that they highlight that for students, because it's not just we're a great institution. Yeah. But we want to help you get here. And I think to me, like, when students see those schools in the virtual college fair that have TCK support, that have scholarships for them, you know, it just helps them know, like, we get you and we see you and we want you. Yeah. You know, I mean, we exist for you, and you have a place of belonging here.
And it's so good to be wanted.
It is. Oh, my goodness. Don't get us started on that. So, I have, and I know we need to round out. We could talk about this for days and days.
We can have a part two.
Absolutely. But I've got a very specific question that I think is going to lead to a very general question. How was that for a setup?
Oh. Right?
So intriguing. here's the specificity. I said that with no problem.
I know. Well, you're clearly more professional than I.
Here's the specificitarian question that I have. So this was our experience. Our kids grew up, and I think this is the experience of a lot of people, because that university really is the turning point for a lot of expat families, right? That's when they're making the decision. Is this when we go back? Is this when we – and they're – It's not like there's only one child, right? Like there are multiple children. So we go back for that oldest child. And then the next three in line are now back in their passport country and kind of finish their schooling there. So we chose to do that in the middle of a pandemic, and it was chaos. But our experience was our kids spent most of their educational experience in a small international school environment that had dedicated support to college focus, right? Like there was somebody on staff that was their job, and they had a very few number of people really to take care of, relatively speaking, right? Our daughter, she finished in American public school, you know, high school of 2,000 people, and had a college counselor, maybe a couple of college counselors, but they were not giving her the attention that she was used to, right? Like it was absolutely the churn. We're trying to get these kids to graduate. We're trying to get them into any college. Any college is good. She was like, it was a switch for her. And it was frustrating, because all of a sudden the attention that she was used to, she didn't have access to, right? Now we've got a son who's beginning high school next year, right? And so it'll be a different experience for him. But what excites me is that there are people out there like you who are kind of bridging that gap between systems and who understand both sides. What would you have told us in our, say, second month of my daughter's senior year of high school, when we're starting to realize, okay, this is not the support that we've had. What do we do? Who do we turn to? Who's out there for us to get the answers that we're looking for? And whatever you say here is going to be too little, too late. Thank you for not being there when we really needed you. But still, for the other
here.
Listener,
you could have called. I've been there. You could have
right?
called.
But Ooh, boy.
It's my fault. It's my fault. I should have connected you earlier.
Where were you, Chris? You knew about her.
I was busy meeting people at conferences. I'm so sorry.
I was busy meeting people. It's kind of a twofold question. And the second part I'm really excited about, because it's the culmination of a lot of years and some training this summer. But the first one is whatever your learning style is, I've got a boatload of resources for families that they can pick and choose from. And so if you're a webinar person, you can be a monthly navigator for free. And I load webinars that follow the admission timeline. They're usually led by university representatives, and they cover everything from essay tips to what is early action to scholarships. There's financial aid officers that speak on there. There's transition resources for TCKs, and those are just, you know, as the year goes along. And so that's the monthly navigator. I have it in a course format just to keep out spam. If you're not a webinar person, I started last year a podcast that's 15 minutes or less of college admission tips. And so those are segmented into a bunch of different avenues. And like next week's is on accommodation. You know, what do you do if your student needs accommodation? What does that look like in the application process? And so those I try to keep at 15 minutes or less. So, you know, if you're just, the goal for that is to, you know, learn something and kind of feel like you're keeping up while you can, you know, fold a load of laundry, empty the dishwasher, take your kid to school, whatever your situation may be. So those are two things that are free. The virtual college fair is free. And I mean, students learn a lot in those, you know, it's as if they had stood in front of the table of, you know, whatever university is present and kind of hear their presentation. You can screenshot things. There's a PDF that you can fill out. I really recommend if families are going to do that, that the parents have one account and the students have one account so that the student doesn't feel like, ooh, mom saw that I watched these three, because that's just not helpful. The second thing that I've started this year that I really feel like is probably one of the things I'm most excited about, Jerry, is it's called the College Project. And there's a junior version and a senior version, although you could do it on your sophomore year, but it really just leads through a prompt and reflective exercise course for you to think through where you want to be, what the type of university best fit for you is, how you're going to pay for it, what is best for you. And it builds over time a university profile for you so that you can have 3 to 4 universities that you think you would apply for, say, your senior year. And it builds that strategy your junior year so that you can then have that, you know, basically done by your senior year. And your senior year, it takes that and builds on it and sets up like a calendar, a completion calendar for you and how to do that. You know, how are you? So these are your 5 universities. What are you going to do about it? And, you know, works on your essay, works on your identity pitch, you know, like how do you tell who you are when you're on an interview with a college? And just works through those things. And so I think if you, you know, if you have those opportunities to do that, and the goal of it is to basically build a presentation that you present either to me or to your college counselor with your parents. And it's great because it facilitates this conversation of like, this is what I want to do. I've really thought through this, instead of like, well, honey, where do you want to school? You know, and it just really helps kids think through that process. And so it is overwhelming and it is a lot. And I mean, the detail is just so voluminous. And so helping kids think through that really takes out the anxiety. And then having that conversation of like, you know, always, always the summer between your junior and senior year, sit down and have that conversation of like, you know, hey, Samantha, this is how much we can contribute to college. And from the beginning saying, you know, we have $5,000 a year we can contribute to college because Nathan is right behind you, or, you know, Luke is right behind him. And, you know, that's a reality. But if kids don't understand what our own limitations are as parents, it's very difficult for them to expect what's next.
And they've been living in a haze their whole life of mom and dad just pay for things, right? Like mom and dad just, they always have money.
And things just appear.
We always eat and we always have clothes and we always, and it's, it really is. It's like that, it is that adulting piece of kind of coming into that, that reality space of what does this actually look like and what resources do parents have and what don't they have? And there's, I love that you're out there, you know, for all those people that it's still relevant for.
Don't you have other kids?
We do. Actually,
Okay.
And actually, this is actually very helpful. Because we're not like our daughter's not finished yet, right? Like we still have discussions to have, and we're still figuring all of this out. This is all absolutely relevant, no matter who you are, where you are. This is incredible. You are an incredible resource. To the millions of parents out there who are stressed, right? Like genuine, like it is. It's the anxiety and the mystery. You said it well. Those two
and
things.
I'm not unlike them. You know, I mean, I have a junior right now. We're visiting. We're doing.
If you were, you wouldn't be relevant, right? Like if you were just saying this stuff because you researched it. You feel it. You've done it. You know the language, and you like you've turned the rocks, right? And you know what's under them. So people like you are a great resource, and we're going to do everything we can to connect you to our other listener.
I think our other listener,
if they just tell everyone they know, you know, listener, you get the word out, because I have to admit, I think as you know, as we close this episode off,
yeah, I know that listener, Chris, and they don't have any friends, but
I think you're wrong, Jerry. I think you're wrong.
Somehow we're going to get the word out there.
We're going to get the word out. But I think this episode it's a taunting episode. I'm just going to say it. It's a taunting episode because, there's so much more. We basically just scratched the surface and opened up a whole bunch, but there's so much more. So take this taunting episode for what it is. And, we'll put the information, in the show notes. Is that what the cool kids are calling it?
Yes, the show notes.
Show notes. Look at me. Mm-hmm. We're like a real podcast. I know terms. Yeah. But we'll make sure and put, you know,
Chris.
Oh, that was a good segue.
Like that, I wanted to catch you right there because, you know, Chris, Christy, you've got a podcast, don't you?
I do.
Tell us about that so our other listener can listen in.
Exactly.
If you just look on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple, it's called KC360. So you can just Google that and it's there. And again, you know, 15 minutes or less usually. Try to keep it at that. And then it's all relevant in some capacity.
We've never done that. 15
exactly.
minutes or less.
So we're so impressed with you. Yeah. We're so impressed.
Oh, it's an exercise in efficiency on my part. Please don't be impressed. I just know my attention span, and I know, like, if I'm going to absorb information that's so, as you said, taunting and voluminous, how do you do that? Well, you do it by chunking it out. And so if I'm going to help families the most, then it has to be in a capacity that they can actually absorb. And so it's really an exercise in efficiency. It's not anything to do with anything else.
I think that's
capacity.
That's brilliant, and exercise or efficiency are not things that Chris or I are known for. Either one,
you're not gonna find those on this podcast. Let me tell you.
But it does make sense. Are there any other ways? Like, how can people connect with you? We'll put all of this in the show notes. But how can people find you if they want to find you?
My website is kc360.co, not .com, .co.
Okay.
Less spam.
See, she's so efficient. She doesn't even use that extra letter. It just doesn't even need the M. 360.co.
Yep.
And you can see, you know, a bunch of resources that we have there. You can link to the monthly navigator. The podcast link is there if that's something that you want to look through that way. And then under different membership styles is where the monthly navigator is. That's free that you can access webinars. And then also the college project. So that's a paid service, but it's, normally 150, I have it for 75 through the end of September. So
love it. That's a steal. That is a steal. Like the value that you've put out on this, in this conversation alone, right? $75 is nothing. People should give you 10 times that just for logging on.
I mean, that's my pitch. Yep. Just the information you've been giving us, we should be paying you way more than we are. By way more.
Well, as your brand new sponsor, I will be paying you.
Woohoo! Do you hear that, dear listeners? If you missed that, we actually have a sponsor now. It's
a real sponsor.
We're like real people with real sponsors now.
Yep.
Real people.
Yep. Except for other sponsors are trying to sell things, and like we've got a sponsor who is our expert guest.
Right.
That
makes it even better.
Beautiful.
Even better.
Yep.
Even better. Oh, Christy, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. Again, this was a taunting episode because there's so much more. So, other listener, please do check out kc360.co. Tell everyone you know, because this needs to get out there. This, you know, it's good stuff.
Yes.
Past me would have loved it. Past Jerry would have loved it. Future people will enjoy it. So
absolutely.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us. And we'll have you back. We'll have you back for so much more.
Thanks.
And just as an exercise in efficiency, Chris and I will be launching dieselandclooney.c.
Just
the O, forget the M. We're just going to be even. Like we figure if we could look at efficient people and be one letter more efficient than they are.
Yeah.
So that's what it's looking for that on the internet. Yep.
Yeah.
I support that. I respect that.
It's coming. Well, we'll see you soon, other listener.